Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events on this Friday afternoon, January 17th, 2014. Once again, thank you for joining the program this afternoon. I'd like to say good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
I'm going to get you first today and say hi.
Hi.
How's Dallas?
Good. Dallas, I don't know. You know, the truth of the matter, I like Texas. I don't care about Dallas. Dallas.
So much for Dallas.
It's just another big city, you know. It's rural Texas is where there's something real happening. And it's only secondary when you get into the big city. I can remember living in El Paso years ago and people telling me that Dallas isn't part of Texas. Dallas is part of the East. They compared it to Boston and Philadelphia and New York City and the rest of that. And I don't agree with that comparison exactly, but it does go, you know, trying to find who is, will the real Texans stand up, please? And there are going to be, you know, a couple million real Texans that are going to stand up, but they're all going to dispute the lineage of the others. They're going, oh, you're not a real Texan. I'm a real Texan, but you're not a real Texan. It's, there's a certain amount of mythology that goes along with being a Texan, and it's a good thing. I like it. I like living down here, and I like Texas. But Dallas, you know, it could be any one of 100 different cities. There's nothing especially Texan about Dallas. If that makes any sense. I don't know if that makes any sense to people, but it makes sense to me.
Well, if we have any Dallas listeners out there, you can call us and let us know if it makes sense or not. Let's go to gold and see if gold made any sense today. Gold was up $10.80 currently on the New York spot price at $12.54. You have silver up 20 cents today at $20.39. You have platinum up 20, interesting, at $14.57. And palladium was up $4 at $751. USDX today is trading quite stronger today, 0.32 at 81.25. Interesting to see the U.S. dollar up that strong and gold up as strong as it was. Crude oil was up just a few pennies today, up 21 at 94.17. And the paper markets today, again, the Dow and the NASDAQ, they're ending higher based on the bank and tech earnings this week. The S&P finished a little bit lower, not by much. You had the 16,458 on the Dow, up 41 points. Even though the NASDAQ finished higher for the week, it was down 21 points today at 41.97. The S&P was also down 7 points today at 18.38. And the 10-year yield, yes, it's still 2.83, down 0.02 for the day. So interesting day in the markets. A little kind of blah in the markets, but it is nice to see gold up getting over that 1254 level. Yep. And definitely looks like we've reached a bottom for gold and silver. And we'll see. I thought the Davos was supposed to begin this week, but it's actually next week that they'll be over in Davos. So you'll hear all these stories coming out and all the positive spins for world economies and what the elite plan on doing. But
will we get the conspiracy theories? Huh? Will Davos spin out any conspiracy theories? Oh, of course there will be. If we had word that Obama was having a quarter pounder with cheese done at McDonald's, there'd be conspiracy theories coming out of that. And certainly we'll have some coming out of Davos. There will be no end of the commentary, the speculation and the conjecture that we'll get out of Davos next week. So we can look forward to it.
And we do have on the 20th, we'll have the president's speech, the State of the Union, unfortunately. But not too many of my clients listen to it. A few do, and I try. I do sit down, I turn it on, and I do try to watch it. But I find it very difficult. So,
you know, it's like, I understand that. I understand that, especially in women. It's like a Three Stooges. It's like a Three Stooges thing. Women don't get it. You understand? It's the same thing with Obama. I don't think women really get Obama. If you're a man, you sit there, you can listen to the State of the Union speech, and you can laugh. It's hilarious. You understand? It's like watching Curly smacking, I don't know, whichever one the other one was. But, yeah. So I'll probably listen to the State of the Union speech, but I'll do it just for giggles.
Well, don't say I don't get that just because I'm a female. I get it very much, but
do you like
I don't think evil is funny.
Do you like Three Stooges? Three of the most evil people. Do you ever see them smacking each other in the head with 2x4s and the rest of that?
Hey, my last puppy dog was named Curly, so I do like.
But it wasn't Curly, was it?
Yes.
Well, I mean, Curly wasn't Curly.
Yes.
Curly was bald, if I remember correctly.
No, but she had a lot of curly hair. That's how she got her name.
You can't be calling somebody who's got a lot of curly hair Curly in the same sense that you could call the guy Curly that was on the Three Stooges, because of my recollection, he was bald.
Yes, he was.
Mm. All right, so there's a disconnect here. You understand? Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Slightly.
Slightly, yeah. That's you do get the Three Stooges, don't you?
Yes, I do.
All right, well, then maybe you'll understand Obama.
I will
understand the State of the Union's speech also.
Where are we going today? I don't know. It's been a hectic day here at Discount Gold and Silver. A lot of people have seen the move in gold, and you know, there's a lot of discussions about the resetting of the U.S. dollar and a lot of things. You have Gerald Celente is predicting things to unfold here in the first quarter, the second quarter, and even John Williams of Shadow Stats, he's looking for something, I think, by the end of the first quarter. I think he's even a little earlier. And a lot of other folks out there are making their predictions of something major coming our way here in the first couple quarters. And we certainly see Washington. You've seen them put through the budget, so there won't be any debt ceiling situations or any discussions whatsoever of the debt of this country until after the election, and you know, they postponed the Obamacare for companies of 50 plus employees until after the election next year. They've been able to drop the unemployment rate down below 7%. So it's going to be an interesting and very disturbing year, and we'll see how it plays out, and we'll see just what kind of power the elite have, how much power the Washington, Wall Street, and the Federal Reserve and the other central banks have in order to keep this illusion in play for not only this country but for other countries around the world. And it'll be interesting to see what is the what's going to be that one
black swan event. Exactly. At the black swan event, and that's where something strange happens, something unexpected. Instead of a white swan, you get a black swan, and all of a sudden everybody's, oh my gosh, a black swan. That's when people get their rifles and their shotguns out to shoot the black swan when it flies overhead.
And of course they'll be picking up their phones and calling Discount Gold and Silver to protect, you know, from losing any more money, but don't wait for that black swan. Do it now.
I don't think we're going to see the black swan in the first quarter of this year, and the reason for that, I mean, we may have talked about this in the last day or two, I don't recall, but the Federal Reserve, Reuters published an article entitled Worried Fed Seeks to Curb Wall Street Bank's Commodity Trade. And I think we talked about this maybe on Wednesday, but the Federal Reserve has a commentary period that will be open until March 15th. And they are proposing to pass, well, here's according to Reuters, the U.S. Federal Reserve on Tuesday took a first formal step toward restricting the role of Wall Street banks in trading physical commodities, citing fears that a multi-billion dollar disaster could bring down a bank and imperil the stability of the financial system. First point, they are going to restrict, they propose to restrict the Wall Street bank's ability to deal in physical commodities. This is powerful and important information because physical commodities include gold. Right? If Wall Street banks are no longer able to trade in gold to the same extent they have in the past, if the new rules, which have yet to be specified, but if these new rules restrict their ability to trade in gold, it means that Wall Street will find its ability to manipulate gold prices also reduced. All right? This is an important, important subject, and they justify this citing fears, and I'm quoting, that a multi-billion dollar disaster could bring down a bank and imperil the stability of the financial systems. I cannot imagine that the Federal Reserve is going to publish an article where they warn about a multi-billion dollar disaster unless they really believe that the possibility is substantial and perhaps even imminent. I'm going to guess that what they see as the great danger to the Wall Street banks is that they are running out of physical gold. They've been selling paper gold on the gold market, on the commodity market. That's what's actually been sold as paper gold for the last decade or more. Now, some people took physical delivery, but most people were content to just take a check. If they made money in the market, they took a check. And the banks could, in theory, sell physical gold, but in fact they're only selling paper gold most of the time. The reports indicate that they are now on the verge of running out of physical gold at COMEX, for example, and they're not going to be able to make good on their deliveries. They sell the paper gold and they're betting people will just take a paper check, but people are saying, no, I don't want the paper check, I want the physical gold. And the result is the COMEX warehouse has been nearly exhausted. I think they're down to the neighborhood of something like 35 tons of gold, and it's possible that that quantity of gold could be sold and, in theory, delivered in a single month. They only have a month's supply. Previously, they had, I think it was 3,000 ounces of gold. No, I can't remember the number, but they had 20 times more gold than they have right now. All right, they have lost 85% of their physical gold in the last 9 months. It indicates they're going to be out of gold in the near future. I think that is the multi-billion dollar disaster that could bring down a bank and imperil the stability of the financial system. And I think that doesn't say so in the Fed's report. They just say we're gonna change the rules on physical commodities. Right? They didn't say what rules they didn't say what the rules would be. They didn't mention gold specifically, but I think it's the schism between physical gold and paper gold. I think that's where the banks are in great jeopardy. So they're gonna change these rules. However, they're gonna have a commentary period that's gonna last until March 15th, which means the new rules aren't gonna come out until probably around the end of March, which means to me that they don't anticipate the black swan event. They don't expect the banks, the Wall Street banks, to run out of gold one way or another. They'll keep them supplied until at least the end of March. But sometime in the second quarter, the Federal Reserve is apparently determined to restrict the Wall Street banks' ability to trade in physical commodities. And if that restriction includes gold, and I can't imagine how it wouldn't, if it includes gold, it means somewhere in the second quarter, they're not going to be able to artificially suppress the price of gold, at least not to the same extent we've seen over the last year or more. And that means the price of gold comes second quarter, it implies, doesn't necessarily mean it, but it certainly implies that the price of gold sometime in the second quarter of this year is going to go up, up, and away. Not necessarily so, but that's certainly a high probability. So I see this article again on the Fed. They're going to restrict physical purchase of gold by the Wall Street banks, purchase of physical commodities, presumably including gold. I see this as a huge story. And in terms of timing, again, no black swan event probably in the first quarter of this year. But after we get past the end of March and we get into the second quarter, that's when we can expect to see the probability of a big jump in the price of gold. It will be increasing significantly. When we'll see that price, don't know, but don't expect it before the end of March. I do expect it second, third quarter of this year.
So, folks, don't wait. Don't wait for something to happen. You know, have your plans now. Get positioned today. And, you know, don't wait. And that's what always happens. It's human nature. Everybody feels a little comfortable now. We all feel a little unsure about what is going on. And, you know, they can't do it any longer. But on the other hand, we don't seem to have that necessity today. But it is just as important today.
It's like preventive maintenance. No one ever does it. We all know that you're supposed to change the oil in your car, your truck, every 3,000 miles or whatever, and nobody does it. You know, we just, you keep on letting it. If there's more carbon in the oil, it makes it thicker so it doesn't leak as much. It doesn't leak as much around the seal on the oil pan. It'll clog up the leaks. Justify it one way or another. I'm being facetious, but we don't do preventive maintenance. We know it should be done, but almost no one does it. Gold is preventive maintenance. And at the point in time when you really need the gold, it's going to be very difficult to find. Yeah, looks what else is hard to find, Melody? An ability to keep talking after it's time for the commercials.
You have no
I'm Alfred Adisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We're going to take some commercials. Be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis, here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. Program's brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
I just want to let folks know where, even though gold is up, silver is up. We're going to continue the specials that we had all week long. We have the 40 silver eagles and $40 face value of the 90% silver, a combination of quarters and 50-cent pieces. For $1,600, that includes your shipping. And we also have Mint State 61 $20 gold pieces, either the Saint or the Liberty. It is our choice, depending. We'll work with you any way we can at $1,450. So it's a great, great, great special. Give us a call at 800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And visit our website at DGScoins.com. DGS for Discount Gold Silver Coins.com. We talked a little bit, Al, about the $1.1 trillion government spending bill that's been passed, and I believe Obama is going to sign it. And Earl Blumenauer from Oregon was asked if he read it before he voted for it. He came out and said nobody did.
Yep.
He said it once again. He was asked, and he says, did you have a chance to read all the pages? Nope. Nobody did.
Yeah, no.
And again, we come to this. 64 Republicans and 3 Democrats voted against the legislation. The final vote was 359 to 67. And the legislation was opposed by conservative groups and conservative members of Congress. The bill increases federal spending by $44.8 billion this year over the spending level previously set by Congress. And, of course, this again takes us close to or after the election. So they didn't read it. You'd think they'd learn.
No, they won't. They can't. the volume of, you know, I can remember we challenged Dick Armey, congressman from Texas, back, oh, probably 15 years ago, back in the 90s. We were at a public, myself and a couple other people, were at a public meeting where Dick Armey was talking about how he votes for laws, and the first thing he did was to check to see that they were constitutional, the rest of that. We got into it, and it was became immediately apparent, I can't remember what law we were talking about, it was a law on economics, it might have been NAFTA. It was a law that dealt with the economic system in any case, and Congressman Armey was a former professor of economics. He had a degree in economics. He's one of the few people in Congress who should have been able to read the law and say, look, this makes sense or it's stupid. And it was big. It was complex. And the truth is he hadn't read the law. He didn't know what it said. Now, it's not that's been going on for a decade or more. Michael Moore, when he did one of his movies, he interviewed one of the congressmen, might have been Rangel in New York, and he said, why didn't you guys read the Patriot Act before you voted for it? And the congressman, I think it was Rangel, Claude Rangel, but I don't remember for sure. He said, son, we don't read it. He said, welcome to Washington. We don't read any of the legislation. And at the time, I thought the congressman was exaggerating, but he was telling the truth. They don't read the laws they vote for up in Washington, D.C. It's in part because the volume of laws that's being produced up there is so spectacular. How many pages did you say there was in the spending bill, Melody? Did you say 1,500?
Over 1,500.
Do you know? We're not talking about reading some romance novel. We are talking about 1,500 complex, interrelated text words, 1,500 pages on law that is, you've got to be very, very intelligent and studious and dedicated before you can put that thing together. None of them know what's in the laws they're passing. And you'd have to be an Einstein to actually read that thing and say, well, this is all right. This makes sense to me. Or to sit back and say, no, this is crazy and I'm not going to vote for it. I have complained for some time that what's happened in Washington, D.C. is that our congressmen and our senators are no longer legislators. They are in the legislative branch. It is their business to write and enact the laws. And I have an idea about a law, and I talk to another congressman, and he says, no, not that. We got to do it this way. And we talk to a third guy, and he's got an opinion. And we sit down, and we work among ourselves to see if we can get enough people, one, to pass this law, and number two, if we can reach an agreement on what the law should say. But we, the congressmen, actually read and write the law. That's not happening. Right now, someone else is writing the laws, and all the congressmen do is front. They broker the laws. They don't legislate. They don't write. They don't even read the damn laws, and you and I are required to obey the laws that Congress doesn't even understand. This is extraordinary because the essence of every law, if you listen to the Supreme Court, when they run into a section of law where the language is ambiguous and people don't clearly understand. They say, well, it might mean this and it might mean that. What's it mean? They take it ultimately to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court is required to decide what the Congress meant when they wrote a particular segment of the law. And they go back and they look at committee meetings, and they look at the congressional record, and they look for evidence, and you try to think, what the heck? What were those morons in Congress thinking when they wrote this line? And the truth of the matter is they weren't thinking anything. The essence of law is congressional intent. This is what the Supreme Court has said. They look, if the law is ambiguous, they look, what was the congressional intent when they passed this law? And that's how they determine what ambiguous or unclear phrases mean. What was their fundamental intent? There is no intent when they don't read or write the laws. There can't be any intent. Now, what is the law when Congress doesn't even know what they're writing? And we wonder why this country's in big trouble. Part of the reason is because someone is writing the laws, they're handing them to Congress, and if they give them a sufficient gratuity, a political campaign contribution, otherwise known as a bribe, then Congress will broker the law. Or some members of Congress will broker the law. And so Congress, they are no longer legislators, they are brokers. And there's a big, big difference. And it's all, it exposes all of us just to incredible jeopardy. And the story you're talking about today, 1,500 pages in the new budget. Nobody even knows what's going on. The only thing these guys are doing is trying to raise more money so they can be reelected. And God knows why. Why do you want to be elected to Congress? Well, so I can raise more money so I can be reelected to Congress. Why do you want to be reelected to Congress? So I can raise more money to be reelected again. Well, why do you bother going to Congress if you don't actually legislate? If the only thing you're doing is hanging out in this club, why are you even going? The whole thing becomes insane. So I'm against it. We should have a way of checking to see. They shouldn't be able to pass a law that everyone who votes for a law should have to provide evidence that they've actually read it and understand it. And even then, read it one time. 1,500 pages of complex mathematics and accounting. How many times do you suppose you have to read a 1,500-page complex document before you really understand it? Again, Einstein could understand it, but I doubt if he could understand it with one reading. They don't read it at all. This is disturbing, unreasonable, unfair, unjust, and it exposes all of us to great jeopardy.
It's almost easier for them to come out and say, well, I didn't read it, than to say, I read it and I don't understand it. So they don't want to read it because they don't want to admit that they don't get it. You can't.
And that's exactly right. If they say they know, they've been trapped now a bunch of times. They say, well, yes, I remember in favor of the law. And they said, well, what about this section? What about paragraph 23 on page 27? And it says such and such and such and such. These guys, if they claim to have read the law, if they claim to know what it is, they will be quickly exposed as morons. It's better to say the Butterfly McQueen defense for litigators. I don't know nothing about legislation, Miss Scarlett. You can't ask Butterfly McQueen, your congressman, Butterfly McQueen, you can't ask him, what does it mean? They don't know anything about it. They're just there for the fun. We're in trouble, folks. You know, we talked about a black swan event at the beginning of the program. With no telling, they're going to pass a law one of these days that's going to be so insane. God only knows what the consequences of the law will be. And when it's all over, how was I supposed to know? I'm just a congressman. I just vote for this stuff. I don't read it.
But you would also think, too, that by the time it gets to the end of all the approvals and signatures, even at to the top of the to the chief, he should read it.
Read the law.
They should all read it.
I understand it. They ought to be made to read
it. Even the president should read it.
They ought to be tested on it. There should be a test at the end of the law. It's like, and if you don't pass the test, it's like an eighth grade exam. True or false? All right? And they give you 50 questions at the end of the law. And you have to go in there and check true or false. The law says this, the law says that. True or false, true or false, true or false. If you don't get a passing grade, if you can't at least guess what the law says.
It could even be an open book.
Yeah, maybe even that.
1,500 pages.
The questions. Right? Then, if you get a passing grade, then your vote counts. If you don't get a passing grade, your vote doesn't count. Huh? How's that, Melody? That's a good idea.
That is a great idea.
Yeah, it's a great idea. It really is a great idea. I don't know how we'd ever enforce it. We'd certainly never get Congress to agree to it. It'd have to be an amendment to the Constitution where it says, look, the idiots in the cat house have to, they actually have to read the laws, and they have to pass an exam on each law before they can vote for or against it.
Well, also, you know, we're talking about Washington now, but there was over 40,000 laws that were implemented after in the first of 2014 across this country. You know, your states, your communities, your local communities, your counties, your cities. Is that legislation ever read by?
No. And but
is it understood a little bit more than probably?
Well, at the local level, I'd say probably, yes. Yeah. At least that's least well understood at the national level and perhaps best understood down at the local level because they are still plugged into a certain level of reality at the local level. It doesn't seem to afflict Congress. But still, the presumption is if they pass the law, you and I are obligated to know what that law is. Ignorance is no excuse in the eyes of the law. The Congress doesn't even know what the law says, but you and I are supposed to. And we are bound by laws that Congress hasn't read, doesn't understand, but voted for anyway. And then you and I are obligated to obey that law. And if you don't, they have to get tough. They've got because we live in a society of law and order. Only nobody knows what the law is. Good God.
Well, today Obama had announced he picked somebody to lead the NSA probe, and of course it's one of Soros's cronies. And so, you know, again, it's just interesting how, you know, who runs what. And it's like, what's the point? It makes no difference.
There's no business like show business, like no business. You know, it is. It's just a damn farce.
Yes. But he announced John Podesta is going to lead a comprehensive review of big data and privacy. And what he didn't mention, that Podesta is the founder of the Liberal Center for American Progress, CAP. They've gotten over $7 million from George Soros since 2000. And was one of course, we all know he was one of the Keystone Liberal think tankers founded after the Democrats lost the election in 2004. The CAP was the Center for American Progress. And so, again, there, you know, the connections, the ties to the money.
Right? And the built-in bias.
Yes.
We're going to have an investigation. That's like hiring the guy who burned the house to the ground. Hire the arsonist to run the investigation to see if arson was committed. The arsonist isn't going to find that evidence. And that's what they're doing right now. They're just hiring another arsonist to find out who's responsible for burning a house to the ground. And they're going to hire somebody who's essentially handpicked by George Soros. And what do you spend? Soros is part of the people who are interested in lighting fires. And so it's going to prove there was no arson. That's what we're going to find out. Oh, there might have been a little arson, but if it was, it was committed by lower-level executives. And without the approval, never with the approval of the president or the Congress or the Senate or even the federal courts. It's always some mid-level bureaucrats. Take the heat.
We got an email in from Benny. She says to our prior... about our black swan, one thing you haven't taken into consideration is tax season, the monies these gangsters are going to receive from our hard labor. Don't you think if heck is going to break loose, it would be after the tax season? She's right.
No, that's probably true.
Can't do anything before the 15th of April.
Yeah, exactly, which again takes us into the second quarter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, April starts, it's the first month in the second quarter. They're going to probably keep a lid on things until at least after March 15th when they finish the comments, and then they change the federal laws, and that puts us probably into the month of April, maybe even later, before we actually get the new rules on commodity trading by Wall Street banks. But she's exactly right. They'll probably hold off until after April 15th. But then the fur will fly, ladies and gentlemen. And first, we're going to take some commercial announcements. Frank is playing the music. That means we got to stop talking. Melody is here. I'm here. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Ruby's here.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
Oh, happy birthday. We all know we talked about the Federal Reserve having its birthday on the
100th birthday. Not just any birthday.
It's 100th birthday.
Uh-huh.
On December 23rd, and they just celebrated their 100th birthday. And, of course, it was signed into law during a holiday weekend.
On December 23rd, back in 1913.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. They signed it into law when most of the people in the House, Senate, whatever, had gone home, and they were able to pull this off without opposition and create this central bank. Now, has that been a good thing for the United States, or has it been a bad thing? You know, when you go back and you look at it, and it started in 1913, hard to say. Was the Federal Reserve a good thing or a bad thing? Because we've had the 1900s ultimately were a good century for the United States, at least much of it. Was the Fed on balance good or bad for us? What do you think, Melody?
I believe it was bad for us.
I think so, too.
I believe it was bad.
Although, in the short run, it looked to be a good and clever idea, even a brilliant idea in some regards, but it's flat-out nuts. Here's an article from Happy 100th Birthday.
That's how they get away with it, Al. They introduce good things. They introduce good things, and then they can sneak in the bad things through the back door.
Yeah, but this was bad all along.
This was bad all along.
And the reason it was bad, here's an article from Elliott Wave International. And it says, on December 23rd, the U.S. Federal Reserve celebrated its 100th birthday. When legislation creating its existence was signed on December 23rd, 1913, in a sneaky move during a holiday week, Congress granted the Fed a monopoly on creating dollars backed by debt. Now, this is the fundamental problem. This is equivalent to me going to a bank and trying to borrow some money. And the bank giving me money in proportion to how much debt I've already embraced. If I was in debt for only $1,000, the banks might say, no, we don't want to give you any money because you're not deep in debt. But if I was in debt for $1 million, the bank said, well, come on down. If you're already in debt for $1 million, we'll give you some more. I'm trying to illustrate the idea that dollars backed by debt is fundamentally stupid. It's irrational. It's insane. And that's what we have for a monetary system. That's what is backing the green pieces of paper in your wallet. And it is the debt, the promise to pay, the promises to pay that have been made on all of our bank loans and our credit cards and everything, all of our financial transactions ultimately are based on debt, and they are based on someone's promise to pay. But we're at a time when there is so much debt out there that the promises can't possibly be kept. We are coming to the end of the Ponzi scheme. You got to give them credit. The Ponzi scheme lasted 100 years. That's a heck of a Ponzi scheme. But it's still a Ponzi scheme. Dollars need to be backed by assets. In a rational world, you back your currency with assets rather than with debt, which is nothing but a promise to pay. And we have finally reached a point where there are so many promises to pay that they can't possibly be kept. Talk about it on a regular basis. Government says we've got $17 trillion national debt. John Williams says it's closer to $90 trillion. The Congressional Budget Office says, including unfunded liabilities, it's over $200 trillion. We might be able to pay $17 trillion. That translates into something like $50,000, $55,000 for every man, woman, and child in the country. $90 trillion, according to John Williams? No way. That's $300,000 for every man, woman, and child in the country. If you have a family of four, your family's fair share of the national debt, if John Williams' calculations are correct, your fair share is coming in about $1,200,000. Your fair share of the national debt. Got it? Got an extra $1,200,000 for you, your wife, and the two kids to pay your fair share to the government or whatever it is that's holding the national debt, holding the debt instruments? I guarantee the vast majority of people don't have that. The debt can't be paid, which means we are coming to a moment when someone is going to have to admit, golly, I don't know how this happened, but we don't have any more money. We can't pay the debt. What happens then? One man's debt's another man's asset. When we wipe out the debt, we also wipe out the asset. For everybody who's borrowed money and they've created these debt instruments, somebody's holding that debt instrument and he actually thinks it's worth something. When we have to admit that most of the debt can't be paid, we have to admit that most of the paper assets are worthless. And at that point in time, how do we build a new skyscraper, a new shopping center, or lend money to Mr. Jones to buy a new flat screen TV? When the paper assets disappear, what do we have for assets? And the answer is a handful of people in this country, a couple of percent, will have assets, and they will be called gold and silver. They're going to be in a position to lend if they care to. Or to buy, better yet. And they'll be able to buy for a fraction of the I mean, who knows, 10 cents on the dollar. $100,000 home that might cost $100,000 is going to be selling for $10,000. I can't tell you that's God's truth, but it's highly probable that that's roughly correct. And if you've got real assets, not currency backed by debt, but money, which is an asset rather than a debt instrument, you're going to have an opportunity to get rich. But vast majority of people won't have the gold. Vast majority of people won't have the silver. What are they going to do? There is going to be a terrible episode of poverty in this country. And it all traces back to 1913 when the Fed monopoly began creating dollars backed by debt. The fundamental premise for the Federal Reserve was insane, and it's been insane for 100 years. Through some very shrewd and sophisticated manipulation and, I don't know, advocacy, they've managed to hold this Ponzi scheme together for a century. It's astonishing. Got to give the devil his due. It's incredible. But it does not look like it's going to make it for another century. It doesn't look like it's going to make it even for another decade, and it's probably going to collapse in the next couple of years. According to this article, the Federal Reserve's total assets are about $4 trillion. But the Federal Reserve's stated capital is $55 billion. This is a 73-to-1 leverage ratio. The average hedge fund has about 2.5 to 1. That's their leverage ratio. The leverage ratio for the Federal Reserve is 73-to-1. And they claim to have $4 trillion in assets, but most of those assets have been recently purchased, and they were correctly called toxic assets. And what they meant by toxic assets were debt instruments that would never be paid. It's, oh, this is an asset. The Federal Reserve is buying these assets. They're toxic assets. Okay, they say, okay, yeah, but it's still an asset. No, it's not. It's a debt instrument that no one wants to admit is worthless. And therefore, rather than make that admission, which would cause, again, we start wiping out the wealth, start admitting that the debt instruments are worthless, that we can't pay the debt, they had to get rid of them. They had to do something to maintain the illusion that the paper debt instruments still had value. And they said, why don't we get the Federal Reserve to buy them? No big deal. Federal Reserve can print all the money it wants. It's no skin off their nose. We'll just get the Fed to buy all this junk. And then we can maintain the illusion that our paper debt instruments have value. And the Fed's been buying it, but the Fed is jammed up. They've got 73-to-1 leverage compared to their real assets. Capital. They've got 73 times as much debt. It means that when this thing goes, we're not just talking about whether or not J.P. Morgan Chase is going to go broke. We're talking about whether the Federal Reserve itself is going to go broke. It's in great financial difficulty and vulnerability, and all of it traces back to this idea that somehow we can use debt and count it as an asset. The idea is fundamentally mad. And sooner or later, that idea is going to come through. And it's not just going to come through in this section or in this country. They point out that other nations are doing the same thing. In China, domestic credit since 2008 is up 2.5 times, from $9 trillion to $23 trillion now. This is more than the entire commercial banking sector of the United States. China's growth in credit is now faster than Japan's before 1990, and America's before 2008. And now there is loan sharking taking place in China, where loan sharks are charging rates up to 50% a year to debt-hungry businesses and households. Even this whole nonsense about using debt as assets, it's not just here. It's colored the whole world. But sooner or later, they have to admit we can't pay the debt. And when they admit that, the paper wealth disappears. It vaporizes to the extent that the debt is, we default on the debt. And everyone holding little pieces of paper says, look, I got a piece of paper. It says $100,000 in the corner, or it says $1 million in the corner. And it's even signed by Jamie Dimon at J.P. Morgan Chase. So I'm a rich man. I got a piece of paper with a signature and a number in the upper right-hand corner. No, you're not. You got nothing but an I.O.U. from people who are so deep in debt that they will never make good on their debts. They can't pay it all. Odds are you're going to lose your assets if you're holding it in the form, holding your wealth in the form of paper debt instruments. You're going to pay a price for that.
And you know how they're lucky if they have a certificate with a signature with a number on it. Now they just get statements. They don't
understand.
Those certificates anymore. So
yeah,
it's even worse. They don't even get the paper.
I understand. It's like Congress. They don't read the laws they pass. Jamie Dimon, the rest of them, they don't even read the things they sign. Nobody knows what's going on. It's like some sort of a bizarre play being put on by children. You know, and nobody's even got a script. The whole thing is insane. And it's one of the reasons, you look at these things, it's one of the reasons why I am convinced you're crazy not to have gold or silver. If you want to store your wealth, if you have wealth and you want to store it, from my perspective, you're crazy to put your wealth into any sort of a paper debt instrument. I know on a short-term basis, it may work out fine. And I know that some of the debt instruments will work out well, even if the whole thing goes south. Worst case scenario, some people will still get through hanging on to certain stocks, certain bonds. They'll be okay. But the vast majority, in my opinion, will not. You trust your wealth in those paper debt instruments, you're headed for trouble, trouble, trouble. It might be a couple of years before we get there, but that's where we're going. And it's just a question of logic. It's a question of inevitability. It is a Ponzi scheme. And like all Ponzi schemes, it's going to work out pretty much like it did for Bernie Madoff and for the people who invested in Bernie Madoff. The only question is, will Jamie Dimon, is he going to jail? I guarantee one way or another, before it's done, the people who trusted him are going to lose their assets. They're going to be screaming. I don't know that Jamie's going to jail, but... And what is most disturbing about all of this is that, at least I think I can see this fairly clearly. All right, I might be misguided. I might be making a big mistake. Some of my premises might be wrong. But I look at this and I say, no, this makes sense to me. I think I can see what's happening. And I can see how dangerous it is to folk to store your wealth in paper debt instruments at a time when the debt is so enormous that it can't possibly be paid. I get that. And it doesn't seem complex to me. It's the sort of thing that I think everyone should understand, and yet the vast majority of the American people don't understand it, they don't get it, they don't care about it. I guarantee they're going to care. The day is coming when they will claim, why didn't somebody say something? Why didn't somebody warn me? We've been warning you for 5 years.
20 years. Coming.
Yeah, well, I'm me. 20 me,
years.
Me, 5 years. You for 20. They don't pay attention to you because you're a girl, though. Right, Melody?
Yeah.
We're going to have to let it go with that. But, folks, you should pay attention. And we will be back on Monday. I want to thank all of you for listening. Have a good weekend. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.